WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Hello, everybody. This is WVUA 90.7 FM, The Capstone, and welcome to episode number 37 of the Full Court Press Podcast. Shout out Ron Artest. My name is Jamie Martinez, and I'm joined today by just Alex Chasen. Nick's out of town, living it up in Auburn, partying. Hopefully he does not die. That's why we did three podcasts for you guys this week. We knew he was going to be out of town, so we're going to hook you up with another one Monday, just me and Alex today. On today's episode, look forward to a lot of league news and our favorite all-time NBA moments. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at @FCPPodcast_UA and on TikTok at @FCP_podcast. With that being said, let's get into it.
Real quick before we get into the NBA news, it's been 10 years of the fateful and horrific Boston Marathon bombing. As a Boston native, I just wanted to bring light to it real quick. It's been 10 years, which is crazy, all the way back in 2013, April 15th, 2013. Now we're April 15th, 2023. It's crazy. It's already been 10 years. Everyone in the entire world knows about this terrible terrorist attack in Boston, Massachusetts. And I just want to bring up the names real quick of the lives lost on this day and the days following with different situations that happened between everything going on. But Martin Richard, an 8-year-old boy, a college student, Lindsay Liu, Crystal Campbell, Officer Sean Collier, and Officer Dennis Simmons, all 10 years ago. I just want to bring this up real quick. As a Boston native, of course, the Celtics playoffs start today. The Bruins playoffs start Monday. The Boston Marathon is Monday. So everything in Boston right now is all around this terrible time 10 years ago. So I just want to bring it up to start off the news and not let anyone forget about this terrible time and, you know, my history as a Bostonian and just American history in general. So let's move on to the NBA and some real news, you know, real NBA news, I should say. Let's get into it. Who snagged that 8 seed last night, Jamie, in the Eastern Conference? That was the Miami Heat. They beat the Bulls 102-91. For a while, though, the Bulls were up in this game and it looked like, wow, Jamie's predictions might have been right. The Bulls might get that 8 seed in the Eastern Conference. No, the Miami Heat snagged that 8 seed, and they'll be going up against the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round of the playoffs in that 1-8 matchup. Jamie, what is your take on this? And can the Miami Heat, I think they might be able to knock off the Bucks. They won't, but if there's a team to do it, this Heat team can, because they've gave trouble to the Bucks a lot of times.
Yeah, so I originally thought they were going to go out and beat the Hawks, but they blew that because their offense sucked. But they come back and only score 102 against the Bulls. So I thought the Bulls were going to win it. They were looking hot at the end of the season. Couldn't get it done. But I do think if there is a team to give the Bucks trouble, it's going to be this team, just because they're so good defensively. If they can hold them to under 100 points potentially, if that's hard, that's hard to do against a team like Milwaukee. But if there's a team to do it, it's going to be the Heat, especially in playoff time. Jimmy Butler's a different animal, so I think the Heat could win a couple games. I don't think they're winning it all, though.
And last night, playoff, Jimmy Butler showed up with 31 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 9 for 10 from the line, 11 from 24 from the field, but 0 for 2 from 3. And it's funny because Kyle Lowry, he showed up in their last game that they lost, but did not really so much in this game, only 5 points in 20 minutes. 2 for 5 from the field. He did have 4 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 steal, but a complete 360, not in a good way, of a game for Kyle Lowry. Max Strus was their little lone star in this game with 31 points. I believe 20 of those coming in the first half with 6 rebounds, 1 steal, 8 for 8 from the line, 7 for 12 from 3, and 8 for 16, 50% from the field for Max Strus. Lone little star in this one for the Miami Heat. Moving on out west, though, who snagged that 8 seed? That was the Minnesota Timberwolves. They beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 120-95, and a very convincing win right there. An all-around team win. Rudy Gobert returned. Obviously not McDaniels, because his hand was still broken for a very long time. But Rudy Gobert did return, and in his return, 21 points, 10 boards, 2 assists, 6 rebounds, no blocks, which is surprising, but 6 for 11 from the field, 9 for 14 from the line. And then Karl Anthony Towns, his partner in the paint, 28 points, 11 rebounds for him, 3 assists. Those are the blocks, 3 blocks right there, 1 for 4 from 3, 11 for 16 from the field. This whole starting lineup did their job. Mike Conley, 14 points, 3 assists, 3 steals, 3 rebounds. Nikhil Alexander Walker, who beat his cousin Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 12 points, 3 steals, 2 blocks, 6 assists, and 4 rebounds. And then Ant Edwards, 19 points, which is obviously very low for him, but as you can tell, this is an all-around team win. 2 steals, 6 assists, 10 rebounds, 3 for 8 from 3, 8 for 19 from the field. All-around team win for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And then just real quick, because SGA is my favorite player in the league, he had 22 points, 3 assists, excuse me, and 7 rebounds. Not the best game from him, but we're really talking about the Timberwolves in this one, and all-around team win for them.
Yeah, this is the Minnesota I completely thought was going to take over the Western Conference at the beginning of the year. Just an all-around team win. Anthony Edwards didn't need to put the team on his back like he did a lot this season. Only 19 points because guys like Rudy Gobert and Kat finally stepped up in capacities they needed to do, especially Rudy Gobert, yes, who had a very lackluster season when he's usually an all-star defensive player of the year candidate. Just wasn't this year. But he goes out, 21 points, 10 boards. That's the Gobert we're used to seeing. And Karl Anthony Towns is back, that number one overall pick a few years ago, 28 points, 3 blocks. The Timberwolves are back, and it could be a scary team to find out west. And
the Nuggets.
That Minnesota is a rocking atmosphere, especially come play-in time. We saw what they did last year with the whole Patrick Beverley thing, and they were rocking last night. So imagine them in the playoffs. It's going to be a very fun team to watch.
And what I forgot to say, they are going to be playing the Denver Nuggets in the first round.
I think they got potential to beat them.
I mean, Gobert, Nick's Jokic? Not here, but I'll fill his role. I don't truly believe this, but I'll fill his role and void since he's not here, as Nick would say, and I quote, they're pretenders, they end quote. So with that said, I don't know. I don't think they will. I'm more leaning, if there's going to be an 8 seed that knocks off that 1 seed, I see the Heat because they've always been controlled to the box. It's not going to happen.
I just think the Timberwolves are more set to face a team like the Nuggets just because Gobert and Kat against Jokic, it's a good matchup compared to Adebayo versus Giannis, where Adebayo is more going to be on like a Bobby Portis or a Brook Lopez.
What I will say is I think both 1-8 matchups are going to be some of the better 1-8 matchups we've seen in a long time. It's not just like a few years ago where the Orlando Magic were going up against the 1-seed Toronto Raptors back when Kawhi was on the Raptors, and they just
The
Magic, you know, gave them some trouble, but they just throttled them 4-1. I could see both of these series going 4-2.
Yeah.
I do believe the Bucks at the end of the day will sweep the first round, but I don't think any game will be easy.
The Timberwolves, in my eyes, will win at least 1 or 2 games.
I had 4-2, I believe, when I'm looking at my – I have my paper in my backpack over there, but I believe I said 4-2 for the Timberwolves and the Nuggets. But moving on to the 2023 NBA Award finalists, they have been announced. Mike Brown, though, I'll start off with this one, Coach of the Year. Excuse me. He's already been named Coach of the Year per Adrian Wojnarowski. You know, he gets those details before anyone else. So I'm not going to talk about Coach of the Year, but I will say, I guess we don't have to talk about it too extensively, but Mark Diagne of the Oklahoma City Thunder and my very own Joe Mazzulla of the Boston Celtics were also named finalists, but it was named to Mike Brown. How do you feel as a Sacramento Kings fan getting that recognition this season? I mean, in general, you got other guys who I'll talk about in a minute who are possibly might be getting awards, but how do you feel about that recognition as a, I'll say Sixers fan, not Nick, as a Kings fan and, you know, the whole team?
This is, I mean, all I got to say is it's about time because coaching-wise, we have been so poverty just for so long with guys like Luke Walton and all them, and it's finally it's about time we have a good coach. It's been probably 2 decades since we've had somebody notable, and Mike Brown has completely turned this franchise around to the number one offense in the league and breaking that 16-year drought from the playoffs. So I think even though Mazzulla and Diagonal were fantastic coaches, Mike Brown was the only one out of all these guys that deserved it. So just congratulations to him, and I'm excited to see what he can do in the playoffs.
I agree, and Nick voted for Taylor Jenkins in our awards. He did not make the top three, but I will say, just give the Grizzlies some credit. They had to deal with some in-house issues with the whole John Morant thing, and they stayed afloat, and we'll see what happens. And then, obviously, Diagne got that 10 seed, and we know what happened with the Celtics, but I definitely agree. Mike Brown deserved that one full-heartedly, 100%. Moving on, though, to the other finalists and these other awards, the MVPs. These ones have not been announced. They won't be announced for a while, but we got Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course, Joel Embiid, and Nikola Jokic. Ooh, how do you feel about this one? Obviously, we've already gave our opinions. We already know. You said you want Giannis to win. I said I want Joel Embiid to win. But, you know, Jokic over Tatum? Is there any controversy there?
I don't know. Just because Jokic has had a fantastic season, a pretty slow kind of end of the season for Jokic, where Antetokounmpo and Joel Embiid stayed hot. So I think this is Joel Embiid's award to lose. I think Giannis is more deserving. But Jokic, I think he's the odd man out. Just, I don't see him winning it.
Moving on to Sixth Man of the Year again, I voted for Malcolm Brogdon. I believe Nick and Jamie both voted for Emmanuel Quickley. But then there's Bobby Portis, who is another finalist on here, which I like to see. He's had a fantastic season off the bench for the Milwaukee Bucks. He's definitely well-deserving to be in that, you know, three finalists right there. Moving on to the Most Improved Player. I voted for SGA. I believe you voted for Laurie Markkanen and Nick.
Laurie Markkanen
as well, I believe. But then there's Jalen Brunson. So there's SGA, Lauri Markkanen, and Jalen Brunson. How do you feel about Jalen Brunson being on here? Because he definitely took a step up, but I don't know if it's as big as a step as, you know, maybe like a Mikal Bridges or some other guys like that.
So Brunson, he really showed out last year in the playoffs in Dallas. He was good last year, but in the playoffs, he was a different animal. He goes over to New York and kind of gets his own team to team up with Julius Randle and RJ Barrett. And he was all-star potential this year. Just fell short. I think it's a very well-deserved. Just because this is, like, he's not hiding in the shadow of a Luka Doncic anymore.
I agree.
Spencer Dinwiddie. This is his own team. And he goes out and leads them to, what are they, the fifth seed in the East?
Fifth seed.
So, for a rowdy New York team with a lot of high expectations, I think Brunson deserves to be here.
I agree. I just think there's some other guys that could be honorable mentions.
Yeah, Bridges should also be up there. But, I mean, he came there like halfway through the season.
Yeah, that's true.
And Brunson did this whole thing the entire season. So I got to give it to him.
Moving on to the – this is where I talk about the Kings again. The clutch player of the year finalists. We got Jimmy Butler of the Miami Heat, DeMar DeRozan of the Chicago Bulls, and then Jamie's very own De'Aaron Fox. I'm going to let Jamie divulge through this one.
Yeah, so this is De'Aaron Fox.
Which we already all voted for this. We all said De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, he's the only one that's going to win this. He's 35 clutch points ahead of second place, which is DeMar DeRozan, also while having the highest percentage. And he's also had obvious buzzer beaters throughout the season. So I think this is De'Aaron Fox to lose. I don't think there's a chance he doesn't win it. But shout out DeRozan and Jimmy Butler. They're extremely clutch guys and have been their entire career, especially DeRozan. It's like four buzzer beaters.
And Jimmy, I mean both.
Jimmy too. He had that that mid-range dagger against the Celtics I remember watching earlier this year. So all these guys are fantastic players, but it's De'Aaron Fox, no doubt about it.
Moving on to Rookie of the Year, the finalists are Walker Kessler, Jalen Williams, and then the unanimous, in our eyes, Rookie of the Year, Paolo Banchero. We don't have to really talk about that one too much, except that one guy,
who voted for
Walker Kessler, of course. And he was talking about advanced stats. And sure, you look at the advanced stats, he's right. But basketball, you use your eyes to watch the game, a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
And then stats are a good part of it as well, especially with the more tech going on in the world. But at the end of the day, your eyes should be the first thing you look at, and then the stats, and then use them combined. He's just looking at all stats.
Well, I mean, the guy who voted for Walker Kessler was a Utah Jazz writer. So
I know, but his
he looks at advanced stats, but come on, you're just biased. I mean, I could see your argument if you worked for, like, I don't know, the Bulls or something, but you're a Jazz writer. I don't care. That's bias.
I don't know.
Banchero was one away from being the first ever unanimous Rookie of the Year. I think he was robbed.
I agree, but I mean, his advanced stats weren't wrong. It's just, it can't be the only thing you look at.
Yeah.
And then the final award, the Defensive Player of the Year. The three finalists are Jaren Jackson Jr., Brooke Lopez, and Evan Mobley. I voted for Brooke Lopez, and I believe you two voted for Jaren Jackson Jr., if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And then there's Evan Mobley. All three of these guys are so well-deserving of it. Again, I'm leaning towards Brooke. The other two are leaning towards Triple J, but I think there's really no wrong answer in this one. And then moving on to just, you know, generic NBA news off the award stuff. Mark Cuban versus the NBA, it continues. The NBA, per Sham Sarania, they investigated and concluded that the Mavericks violated player resting policy. I believe we talked about this on either the last podcast or the podcast before, that the Mavericks, Luka only played like the first quarter, Kyrie didn't even play. They just tanked their last game to possibly make the playoffs for really no reason. Anyways, by doing that, the NBA has fined a Dallas Mavericks, meaning Mark Cuban, almost $1 million, $750,000 for rushing their players versus the Bulls late in the season, which really just it ended their playoff hopes for no reason. I don't know why they did that. We talked about this last time, and this makes no sense to me why they just give up on making a huge trade for Kyrie Irving. And on top of that, you have Luka Doncic, who was already upset. Why not try to make the playoffs and, you know, make something happen? You don't even know. They could have been the Timberwolves and grabbed that 8 seed and you'd be in the playoffs right now.
Yep.
Crazy. But yeah, the NBA has fined the Dallas Mavericks for doing so in that situation. And then moving on, there's some Miles Bridges news. We have not talked about this guy in all season, really, because he just hasn't been in the NBA. He had a terrible situation with his wife and his kid. He did something terrible. We don't have to talk about it. But he has been suspended for 30 games, but they said he already served 20 of those. So when he comes back to the NBA next year, if he does in the 2023-24 season, if someone decides to sign him, he will have to serve a 10-game suspension. So he'll miss just the first 10 games. Jamie, this is my question. No one knew why he wasn't on a team. He wasn't signed. The Hornets didn't re-sign him. No team signed him last offseason or throughout this whole season. So did he really serve already 20 games of that suspension? Because you know what I mean? It's like, why wouldn't they just put the 30 games into next season? Because no one even signed him last year. So it's not like he was on a team. I feel like you usually make the suspension once you're signed to a team. So to me, it doesn't really make sense.
I have no idea. It's weird the way they kind of went about it. But, I mean, whatever team signs him, they still have a 10-game suspension for him. I think he goes back to Charlotte in my eyes. But it's whatever. I'm not sure how they determined that, but it's Miles Bridges. He's a good player, and I low-key hope he goes back to Charlotte.
But he wasn't even suspended last year. He wasn't even on a team, so how can you suspend someone when they're not on a team? You should wait. I mean, don't get me wrong. The basketball side of me, I want him on the court. I want no suspensions. But then the human side of me is what he did is disgusting. He should serve that 30-game suspension when he signs to a team. It's just weird how he only has to serve 10 games of the 30 because he technically already served 20. But he wasn't even playing, so it doesn't even, I don't get it. That's very weird on that standpoint. Moving on, though, to Pistons coaching news. You know, they fired their head coach, Dwayne Casey. Or not really fired. He moved on to the front office. He's getting older, and they're looking for a new head coach. The Detroit Pistons will interview former UConn coach and 13-year NBA veteran Kevin Ollie for their head coaching job. Sources tell Shams Charania of The Athletic. He was the 2014 NCAA championship with UConn and recently finished coaching a stint with Overtime Elite, which we talked about on our NBA Draft Prospect podcast. Jamie, how do you feel about the Pistons maybe moving on to a former college coach and an NCAA champion college coach?
It's pretty confusing to me. I mean, yeah, he has the accolades to back it up in 2014, but with other guys available, like Ime Udoka and the Warriors assistant, the Raptors assistant, and potentially Nick Nurse. Seems like a weird one to me, especially when he's coaching the Overtime Elite. Like, I'm not sure how that's going to translate.
I mean, he did coach college basketball.
So yeah, I get that.
That's better than the Overtime Elite.
Yeah, Overtime Elite just is a little confusing. So, I mean, it's the Pistons. I mean, I think it's a bit of a downgrade from Dwayne Casey just because I thought he was a great coach. But you know what? You do you, Pistons. You do you.
A former six-time All-Star, three-time All-NBA, Seattle Supersonic legend Sean Kemp has been charged with assault in first degree stemming from a March incident when Kemp allegedly fired a handgun in a parking lot of a Tacoma shopping mall. His lawyer, Scott Boatman, tells ESPN that Kemp will enter a plea of not guilty in the upcoming trial and that whole jury, that whole situation in court. What's your take on this, Jamie? Sean Kemp, not a NBA legend, superstar by any means, but a supersonic legend, definitely a supersonic legend. Like I said, six-time All-Star, three-time All-NBA. This is not the first time this news came out, but this is the first time I believe we were talking about it. Now that it is official, he's being charged with these things. Terrible news for Sean Kemp.
I mean, it's pretty crazy considering an old man's going out and doing drive-bys, but I don't know what he was doing. I know there's a whole story behind it, but I mean, you're a six-time All-Star, three-time NBA, All-NBA, and you're a legend. And you can't be doing stuff like this with all the cameras and all the technology around. You're going to get caught. So, I mean, yeah, go ahead and plead not guilty. But, I mean, if the evidence is there, it makes you look like an idiot. So, I mean, Sean Kemp, he's a fan favorite, especially for people out in Seattle and Oklahoma City. But it kind of just sucks to see for a legend to go out this way, potentially.
I agree. And then major news involving high school basketball superstar and University of Memphis commit Mikey Williams. We've grown up watching Mikey Williams. He's a year or two younger than us. A year, actually. And I've grown up watching him since middle school on House of Highlights, all those different basketball people that post all those different mixtapes and all that. But Mikey Williams has been booked on 5 counts of assault with a deadly weapon using a firearm in California. Each charge carries a minimum sentence of 6 months in the county jail if convicted, per ABC 24 of Memphis. Jamie, what is going on with Mikey Williams? The man who used to be a high school phenom. We used to think he was going to be the unanimous first overall pick back when we were, in freshman year of high school, throughout high school. And now he's making dumb decisions.
I don't know. It must be something about Memphis.
He did this in California, though.
Well, I mean, it's got that Memphis blood in him because he's going to Memphis. So, I don't know. We saw what happened with John Morant, and these young kids these days are getting crazy. So, Mikey Williams potentially might have just ruined his entire career. Just because,
especially if he has to go to jail.
If he has to go to jail, yeah, he's done. If he's not guilty, then if he goes into a draft class, I could see some potential red flags around him. He'd be a potential second rounder. So
I think he's already a second rounder. I think that hype from high school, and even when we were in middle school, that's where the hype was. I don't think the hype was still flowing.
I mean, we don't know what he could have done at Memphis, but I mean, even if he does do good at Memphis and performs like a first-round talent, I think these things could hold him back from being a first-rounder.
I mean, he wasn't even an All-American. It was very quiet.
Well, I mean, a lot of kids aren't All-Americans, and then they go to college and they perform really well. So,
I'm just saying where his hype was when we were younger. His hype was All-American, first overall pick, going to Duke. None of that has happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Memphis is a bad school either.
No, it's not.
That's where James Wiseman came from. He was a second overall pick. So it just sucks to see from a kid we were all watching it when we were young to – getting booked for Assault with a Deadly Weapon. It's wild.
And then the final news today, this is actually very good news if you're a Golden State Warriors fan. The championship core of last season is finally back intact. Per Sham Sarania of The Athletic, Andrew Wiggins has been cleared to play in Game 1, that's tonight, versus the Sacramento Kings. He has not played in an NBA game since February 13th. Golden State is leaning toward Wiggins coming off the bench and in a slow time frame of 20 to 25 minutes playing, you know, per game until he's ramped back up. Jamie, Sacramento Kings fan, you're playing against them starting tonight and then continuing the rest of this series.
I'm not too worried just because he's on the minute restriction coming off the bench. So it's not like he's going to be the same Andrew Wiggins that we all saw last year, who was an all-star starter and destroyed people in the playoffs. So
I think he will be.
I don't know. Coming off the bench in 20, 25 minutes, depending on who he's guarding, I think we'll be all right. And I think we could win game one, potentially game two as well.
We'll see what happens. But we are moving on to our favorite all-time NBA moments. I think we can agree we both have a lot more than four all-time favorite NBA moments. I could go on all day. But we each picked out four of our favorite all-time NBA moments. And we're going to start off with Jamie, who has the first one for us today. We'll just jump back and forth until we go through all four. What do you got for us, Jamie?
So my first one comes from this season. Very early on in the season as well. It's De'Aaron Fox's buzzer beater from half court against the Orlando Magic. What makes this moment so special to me is because I get Fox was clutch, but this was something else. I mean, seeing this as a Kings fan was kind of another spark of hope. And he hits this insane buzzer beater from half court in Orlando against a fairly tough team. Orlando was not a pushover this year.
Definitely not. They're beating a lot of good teams.
Yeah. And so he hits that buzzer beater from half court. Absolutely insane. And what made it so special was it was really the spark in the Kings offense and the Kings run. Because, I mean, yeah, they were pretty solid going into that moment. But he hits that shot and they turn into a different beast. Number one offense in the league. Just one of the best home records in the league. The best away record in the Western Conference. So I think that moment is what sparked the Sacramento Kings to be the third seed in the Western Conference. And a potential potential team to watch out for the next few years. So I think that moment will live on with me forever just because of how special it was and what it meant for Sacramento.
And I don't know about you, Jamie, but I have these in – there's no order to these. These are just the way I wrote it down, 1 to 4. These are not like one's the best, four's the worst.
No, these are just in no order.
Yeah, this is just all for some of the greatest NBA moments we have seen in general. My first one has to be from May 2nd, 2017. Game 2 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. My boy on the Boston Celtics versus the Washington Wizards, Isaiah Thomas, dropped 53 points in their overtime 129-119 win to give the Celtics a 2-0 lead over the Washington Wizards. In this game, IT4 had 53 points, 55% from the field, 42% from three, 12 for three at the line, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3 steals from the little fella. What makes this game so memorable for me and just in general as an NBA fan and, of course, as a Boston Celtics fan is Isaiah Thomas's sister, Chyna Thomas, passed away a few weeks before this on April 15th, which is actually 6 years ago today from when we were recording this podcast, in a horrific car accident back in Washington State where they are from. The day after the funeral, Thomas was back in Boston and led the Celtics with 33 points in Game 1 in a win over the Wizards. And then on the day his sister passed away, or actually the birthday of his sister. So she passed away April 15th. A few weeks later, it was her birthday. Isaiah Thomas is the game I'm talking about on May 2nd. Dropped 53 points to give the Celtics a win. Just a terrible time for Isaiah Thomas, but he turned this into a fantastic playoff run for IT4. And a quote from him on the day he dropped 53 points. It's my sister. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday. She would have been 23 today. Everything I do is for her, and she's watching over me. So that's all her, Thomas said. I just think it's one of the most memorable moments I can ever have as a Celtics fan. Isaiah Thomas lost his sister, came back the day after the funeral, dropped 33 points to get a win in Game 1. In Game 2, on her birthday, dropped 53 points. The man lost his front tooth in this series against Bradley Beal, Marcin Gortat, John Wall, that whole Kelly Oubre Jr., that Wizards team, one of the best series I've ever seen in my entire life. And just to put this in perspective, who the Celtics had on this in this time period, Jay Crowder, Amir Johnson, Al Horford, Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas, Kelly Olynyk, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, our rookie Jaylen Brown. This was one of the best times as a Celtics fan. Jonas Jerebko, James Young, Tyler Zeller, Gerald Green. Fun time. This was one of my favorite times as a Boston Celtics fan, and I'll always remember this series, and particularly this game.
All right, so let's move on to my second moment. It's another Kings moment from this year in an absolutely mind-blowing moment. Kevin Huerter hits a game-winning three against the Utah Jazz in a jam-packed and what I'm pretty sure what was a sold-out game against the Utah Jazz. With time winding down in the fourth quarter, we're down. De'Aaron Fox pulls up for mid-range, misses, gets his own rebound, puts up a floater and misses. Sabonis tips the ball back to Keegan Murray at the three-point line. Defender closing out. Murray passes out to Kevin Huerter, and Huerter takes a deep three, drills it with 0.4 seconds left on the clock. And the crowd reaction after that shot is something that's going to stick with me for the rest of my life. It was... like, deafening in the Golden 1 Center. If you go back and listen to that, December 30th, 2022, Kevin Huerter hits that shot, and the noise from that arena blows out the speakers. It doesn't even sound like crowd noise. It just sounds like you're in an Xbox lobby and somebody's screaming into their microphone. So it was absolutely mind-blowing. Huerter played the game of his life, shot 12 for 18 with 30 points. So... that was a special moment to me, something that's going to stick with me, and something that cemented the Kings fans as being one of the top fan bases in the NBA from loyalty and all of that. And I'm excited to see what that fan base can bring in the playoffs, and hopefully they could, you know, dismantle the Warriors a little bit, get them a little scared.
That decibel meter is going to be crazy. Yes. They are going to cheer and cheer for their Sacramento Kings. After a 16-year drought, I cannot watch that. Cannot wait to watch that game tonight. But moving on to my second one. This was the peak of my Russell Westbrook fandom. And also, Nick's not here, so I know he'll enjoy this one. So I'm speaking for both of us when I talk about this one. So in this one, Nick is with me in presence. He's not dead. He's still with us. But his presence is still with us on this one because he loves Russell Westbrook, and I love him too. Not as much as him. I figured that one out real quick when I met him back in August. But I still love him. But on April 9th in 2017, the last game of the regular season, the Thunder were in Denver, and Russell Westbrook truly did the impossible. 50 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists, 53% from the field, 41% from three. This was Brody's third 50-point triple-double, and this was the most special one of them. The Thunder were down 105 to 103 to the Nuggets with about 2 seconds left on the clock. And basically, one motion, Westbrook got the inbound and immediately shot a three-pointer from 35 feet away. The buzzer sounded and the Thunder won, which eliminated first off the Nuggets from postseason contention. And this was Brody's 42nd triple-double of the season, which broke Oscar Robertson's all-time NBA record of a single-season triple-doubles, which he had 41. And this gave Brody 42. And that record was set in 1961-1962, that season. So almost, what is that? 50 years, more than 50 years, this all-time record was broken from this all-time performance for Brody, which put not just the cherry on the top, it put the icing on the cake, it put the cherry on the top, it put the peanut butter on the Reese's Cup. He won MVP in this season. He did it all, and this was the final moment of this season. Russell Westbrook is one of my favorite players of all time. Again, not nearly as much as Nick. He's with me on this one. This is definitely the peak moment for Russell Westbrook. One of the best things I've ever seen on live on TV is right here in this moment. And oh my gosh, April 9th, 2017, I will never forget that one, just like I won't forget May 2nd, 2017 with Isaiah Thomas.
So my next moment is a moment that happened before, pretty sure I was alive. I didn't obviously watch it, but Tracy McGrady, 13 points in 30 seconds. In a low-scoring game against Tim Duncan and the San Antonio Spurs, Tracy McGrady, who's with Yao Ming on the Houston Rockets at the time, goes out and does the absolute unthinkable. With around 30-ish seconds left in the game, they're down 12, and it looks like they're done. Another win for a fantastic Spurs team. But Tracy McGrady kicks into another gear, hits multiple deep threes with a fantastic defender, Bruce Bowen, right in his face, one of the all-time greats. Hits multiple deep threes, multiple clutch shots, free throws, and ones. He does it all in 30 seconds. Gets the steal off the inbound. It's in one of the most magical moments in NBA history. Tracy McGrady does the absolute unthinkable. 13 points in 30 seconds.
Right.
And it was
crazy.
Crazy. I mean, I can't even think of another moment that even replicates that. And I think that puts Tracy McGrady in the conversation as an all-time great, one of the greatest shooting guards of all time, and one of the clutchest players of all time. So he's my all-time favorite. And that's like the first moment you think of when you think T-Mac. Just 13-30, one of the clutchest moments of all time.
No ring, though.
I mean, if Tim Duncan would have gone to the Magic with him, Grant Hill, Tim Duncan, but the Magic didn't let Tim Duncan's mom on the flight, which is whack. So
I remember that story.
Yeah, crazy.
That's the only thing about Tracy McGrady. I wish he had a ring.
Yeah,
he's one of those guys that...
If he had a ring, he's a cemented top 10 shooting guard of all time. There's a lot of people leave him out of that. It's crazy.
He's on that list of greatest players to never win a ring, and too bad he cannot change that.
He's one of the greatest scorers of all time, too.
I agree. Moving on to my third one. So the last two on here, I was fortunate enough to attend these games. That's part of the reason why I have them on here, but also because they were just all-time moments in NBA history. With the first one, Jason Tatum's dunk on LeBron James on May 27th, 2018 of Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And let me remind you, this is a rookie Jason Tatum who absolutely slammed over LeBron James with about 6 minutes left in this game. But we also had a sophomore Jaylen Brown, third year Marcus Smart, plus a cast of pieces around them, but minus their superstars of Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, but they had Terry Rozier, Al Horford, Marcus Morris Sr. All these guys were helping carry this Boston Celtics team through the playoffs to then meet up with LeBron James in the Eastern Conference Finals. That is one of the craziest things I have ever seen in the NBA. That group, that cast, going so far with so much doubt around them because Kyrie was out for the playoffs. Gordon Hayward was out since the first game of the season because he broke his ankle. Just that whole season was so memorable for me. But this moment right here, besides obviously losing 87-79, that was not a good part. But it's like if the Kings don't win this year, it's not a loss. This is exactly how I feel this year. This was not a loss this season because we made it to Game 7, one game away from going to the NBA Finals. And this moment right here, Tatum dunks over LeBron James with 6:41 left in the game, staring down the Cavaliers star and bumping him in the chest. Boom! Looked in his face, ran down the other end. And this was just not like a normal dunk. He jumped over LeBron. He put his everything in his face. It was crazy. His whole body was in LeBron James' face and then bumping him in the chest. A rookie Jason Tatum. This is not all-star Jason Tatum. This is rookie scrawny Jason Tatum bumping one of the greatest basketball players, if not the greatest basketball player of all time. That is a cold move. That is a bad man. And then he followed it, coming down the court again, hitting a three-pointer that gave the Celtics a 72-71 lead. Just that those back-to-back moments were some of the coldest moments in NBA history. One of my favorite moments as a Celtics fan and as an NBA fan, and I'm so fortunate that I was at that game.
Another great moment in NBA history, and one that cemented Tatum as the future of the Boston Celtics.
Yes, sir. Better than Bird. Not yet, not yet.
Not yet.
No, that was too quick. I'll take it back.
My number four is one that I'm glad Nick isn't here for because he'd be all over me for it. It's Kevin Durant, who is one of my all-time favorite players. I know Nick has a lot of history with Kevin Durant. He hates him with the whole Russell Westbrook thing. And
they have love now. You see Russell Westbrook's quote?
Yeah. But this one is when KD was in Golden State against LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals. I have two moments of Kevin Durant, both coming in Game 3 of the 2017 and 2018 NBA Finals. With his dagger three. It's in 2017, Game 3. Durant hits a pull-up three in transition right over LeBron James, who's right in his face, to take a one-point lead with 40 seconds to go. The Warriors would end up taking a 3-0 lead in the series and eventually put the Cavaliers away in five. That would be KD's first ring in the NBA. He won the Finals MVP, and that shot will go down in history as one of the most clutch of all time, especially when looking at the NBA Finals. And then again in 2018, Game 3, once again, from 30 feet out, Kevin Durant holds the ball and pulls up from the exact same spot for three. They were up three already and hits an absolute dagger right over J.R. Smith this time. They're up 2-0 in the series once again. But my favorite image of all of this is they're in Cleveland, and Kevin Durant hits a three, turns around, completely emotionless, staring at that Cleveland crowd, not letting them know that they're going to bed and KD is their daddy. So they go out, sweep the Cavaliers in the next game, and Kevin Durant wins another Finals MVP and another ring. So KD, I don't care what you say about him. I don't care whatever. He was extremely clutch in that series against Cleveland. and one of my favorite players of all time, one of the greatest scorers of all time. And I think if he wins into the championship this year, he's top 10 all time in NBA history.
It's funny. I was exactly about to say the same thing.
If he wins another championship, he's top 10 all time. I have him over Larry Bird.
Because if he wins this year, which I hope he doesn't, obviously, you know, as a Celtics fan. But if he does, there's no way he's not top 10.
I don't care what Nick says. Oh, Larry Bird, what? You don't know anything. He just has bias with Russell Westbrook. I don't care what it is. Greatest scorer in his position of all time.
Greatest scorer flat out of all time. I think he could be top 10 without winning this year.
Exactly. I think the exact same way.
I forget exactly who I have on my list. I'll look at it before our next podcast, which Jamie will talk to you about later in the outro. But I might have even actually put him as like 10. I forget, honestly.
Yeah, I have him at that like 12, 13 range.
I have him close.
But if him or Steph Curry win a championship this week, Curry's like top 5.
I think KD's top 10. If Curry wins a championship this year, he'll be over LeBron. Not all time, but he'll be over LeBron rings-wise.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be 3.
I think he's
better than Kobe.
Obviously over Magic. Obviously.
He's better than Kobe and Magic if he wins.
Kobe's a tough one. I could definitely see it. I think he's obviously over Magic.
I mean, they'll be tied with rings, Kobe and Curry. But then
Curry did it all
better. The best shooter of all time.
By far. So, but back to Kevin Durant. Absolutely fantastic. One of the absolute greats of all time. And this cemented him as the greatest in my eyes. Not of all time, but... scores, all of it, clutch.
No, Kevin Durant, without a doubt, I don't care what Nick says, he would. If you budge Nick, he will agree with this once he gets over his love for Westbrook for half a second. Kevin Durant is the most flawless scorer of all time. He is the only scorer I've ever seen in the NBA that literally, no matter the amount of defense you throw at him, he will score.
Exactly.
It does not matter.
It's not like he was a terrible defender either. He averages over a block a game in his career. So Kevin Durant, for what he does on that court, is an all-time great, and this cemented it.
The only time I've seen him play bad was last year in the first round of the playoffs. Hopefully he can turn that around this year. But other than that...
The way he's looking with the Suns, it doesn't look like it.
8-0 still with the Suns. Other than that, though, he has never had a bad game in his life.
Nope.
Moving on to my final one again, another one that I was fortunate to attend. I don't remember this one as much. I don't know why. Maybe just because it was just a regular game. It just happened to be the night Devin Booker scored 70 points against my Boston Celtics on March 24th, 2017. The sad part is the Suns lost this game 130-120, which just shows how bad the Suns were this season. At the time, the Suns were 22-51 when they lost this game. Yep, that was one of those years for the Phoenix Suns. One of many years, but as you can see where they are now, they've completely revamped their team. But anyways, they lost this game, but Devin Booker scored 70 points, which at the time of this, Devin Booker was only 20 years old, and he had placed himself alongside Wilt Chamberlain, Kobe Bryant, and a few other NBA guys in NBA history for being the sixth player to reach over 70 or more points in a game. And then the crazy part is, Devin Booker has now been pushed off that list, basically, because Donovan Mitchell and Damian Lillard both scored 70 points this season. One was in January, one was in February, which is just crazy. There was such a long period of time between Will, Kobe, all those other guys in the top six, to then Devin Booker. And then just 6 years later, Dame and Donovan do it in the same season. That just shows how scoring is just getting so much more and more. For example, in this game, or just another game. So going back to game seven for a second. The Cavs scored 87 points. The Celtics scored 79. Donovan Mitchell and Dame and Devin Booker all scored 70-71. That would have been like 90% of those points. It just shows how the game has progressed so much scoring-wise. But coming back to this, Devin Booker at the time solidified himself as being one of the top six scorers in a game all time. Booker scored 51 points at half, including 28 points in the final period, which this part, I do remember this part. Everyone in the Garden was cheering for Devin Booker. All his teammates were feeding him. They were down. They lost this game, like I said, but they were just feeding him. They left Devin Booker until the final buzzer for no reason, just to keep accumulating points. He scored 28 points in the final period because his teammates were just feeding him on the court. And just for some background of his teammates around him, guess who the starting point guard was this game? Jamie?
Eric Bledsoe.
No, good guess. Good guess. No, Eric Bledsoe was there. He was just hurt.
Oh.
So guess who their starting point guard was?
Was it a former Celtic?
No.
I have no idea.
I believe he went to Kentucky. Tyler Ulis.
Wow.
And then their starting shooting guard, of course, Devin Booker, small forward. Any guesses?
I remember absolutely nothing about that Suns team.
Jones Jr.
DJJ?
Derrick Jones.
He was in the league?
Derrick Jones Jr.
I thought he was younger than that. Wow.
No, Derrick Jones Jr. He was like a rookie at this point. Marquise Chriss, you remember that name?
Yeah.
And then guess who the center was?
Aaron Baines.
No. You got this. He's on your team right now.
Oh, Alex Len?
Yes, Alex Len was the starting center. And then their bench included Jared Dudley. I don't even know who this is. Who's this? Alan Will. I know. I do know Alan Williams. I just had to click on his name. I didn't know what A. Williams went. And Leandro Barbosa, TJ Warren.
Blur.
TJ Warren, Tyson Chandler, Brandon Knight, Eric Bledsoe, and Gerald Eddy. Now that name, I do not know. Yeah. But other than that, I know the rest of those guys. So Devin Booker had 70 points. Alex Len and Leandro Barbosa were their second scorers of the night, both with 11. Williams with 9. Jared Dudley with 6. Marquise Chris with 3. DJJ with 7. And then Tyler Ewis, their starting point guard, with 3 points and 4 assists. But Jared Dudley, he's the one that helped Devin Booker out the most in that game. Probably the most assists of his life, 10 assists.
Wow.
So one of those games right there, one of the craziest games. Again, I remember the fans cheering, and I remember Devin Booker, like the fourth quarter, but most of that game I don't remember just because it was a regular random night against the Phoenix Suns. No one expected this to happen. But yeah, that is my final one. Insane. Insane. Jamie, you have any final takes on all this stuff?
I mean, that game, like, Devin Booker was cooling off at that point, but that cemented him as a superstar.
I mean, he was only 20 years old.
Yeah, he was only 20 years old, but he has that Mamba mentality. He trained with Kobe his entire career, and I think that's really where that came from, was that whole Mamba mentality. He's probably trying to get to Kobe's 81 at one point, but 70 points, that's remarkable.
Oh, I mean, he was close. They were just feeding him.
Feeding him.
And we have a few minutes left to just talk about some random stuff. That's all I have for the four. That's all you have.
Yeah, that's all I got.
So I got Jason Tatum's new shoes, and today the Celtics start their playoffs, and I was so hyped to get his shoes. I just want to hear your take, Jamie, on his shoes. You've seen him. I don't know if you've seen my pair, but you've seen
the pictures. I've seen your pair. I saw you posted them on your story.
Oh, right. What's your take on the shoes? I'm just curious as a non, because I'm obviously too biased towards it. I love them. I wanted them. What's your take?
Look, I'm not the biggest Celtics guy, but like from a shoe standpoint, I think they're hot booty cheeks. Like, I just don't like the way they look. I'm sorry, but like, I like the Ja Morants a lot better. Did you see Sabrina Ionescu's shoes? They look just like Kobe's. She plays in the WNBA, but they are like really nice shoes. But JT, that whole little air bubble that goes up in the middle, it just looks a little weird to me. I can see them being comfortable playing in, but I'm not sure.
When I picked them up from the mail center here on campus, I shook the box because I was like, these have to be the shoes. I pick up the box, I shake it. I'm like, this thing's lighter than a feather. There's nothing in here. It's got to be a prank. It's probably just a shoe box. I open it up and now the shoes are in there. They weigh not even like 5 ounces. Like, it's the lightest shoe in the world.
That's good.
Which is great. I just don't know if I can wear them on the court because I got ankle problems. Well, I don't have real ankle problems. I just get scared because I sprain them very easily when I used to play basketball on a team. So that's why I wear those, you know, 2-pound bricks of the soldier, LeBron soldiers, because they give me good ankle support. But yeah, they are lighter than a feather. So I will recommend them. If you want light shoes, you can stop on the dime. You want to fly around the court. I recommend the JT1s. Me personally, not for me. I just wanted them more as a collector's item. And of course, a Celtics fan. But I just wanted to bring that up real quick. I just wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I'm not the biggest fan of them. But hey, man, you do you. If you think JT's the next Michael Jordan, it's an investing
thing. No, like that's what I'm saying. If I save them, 10 years down the line when he retires, they could be worth, I don't think they're going to be worth millions like Jordan 1s.
Nah.
So that's a bit crazy. But if he gets a couple championships, maybe an MVP, hopefully, I think I could be looking at, you know, like a rack, man. I think I'd be looking at a few racks.
I could see it.
10 Gs?
10 Gs. That might be a little pushing it.
For his first, because this is the original colorway. I didn't get like the blue colorway. I got the original red, that whole colorway.
But I mean, if you're going to wear them.
I'm not going to wear them. I've tried them on this morning just to like see how they feel. But I don't think I'm going to wear them because I'm not going to wear them on the court. I'm not going to like wear them. They're not like an everyday wearer. So I think it's more I got them as a collector's item.
Hang them up in your room or something. Get like a...
I have a shoebox.
Get like a shelf. Put it up in your room when we get to the apartment. Hang them up in your,
I might do that because back at home, I have two shoes that are in boxes that are nailed up to the wall. Not boxes, but you know the case.
Yeah.
I have a Jamal Crawford signed shoe. Very random story. It would take a while for me to get into it. We don't even talk about that. Sure. I'll get into it real quick. My mom's friend, he met Jamal Crawford at a shoe store in New York. Not that long of a story. He signed it. 10 years later, it was for his son. I randomly just got it as a random gift. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it as a big NBA nerd. Not that long of a story. I give the real quick synopsis of it. The second one means even more to me. On the day my grandfather passed away, back in 2018, I believe February 8th, 2018. I can't get this wrong, but I'm probably going to get it wrong. I'm sorry, Mom. I'm really sorry. But anyways, my grandfather passed away, and I hit the game-winning shot. I believe this was 7th or 8th grade, and I had to hang those ones up because those meant a ton to me because me and my grandfather were super, super close. So I had to hang those ones up in my room. Again, another pair of LeBron soldiers. Those are the only basketball shoes I can ever wear. But yeah, that's Yeah, so those are the two shoes I have, and then the Tatum one. Not a bad idea.
Yeah, do the Tatum ones. Like, those could be kind of hard. But I think that's all we got for y'all today. I want to give a big thank you all for tuning in to WVUA 90.7 FM, The Capstone, and the Full Court Press Podcast. Alex, Nick, and I will be back Friday ranking our all-time players 11 through 20 because we did our top 10 players already of all time.
Where will Kevin Durant be?
Podcast 10, KD, where's he going to be? Steph Curry, where's he going to be? Make sure to follow us on Instagram at FCP_podcast_UA and on TikTok at FCP_podcast. This is Jamie and Alex signing out. Peace.
See you guys.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.